everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk on a Thursday, February 20th. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Thursday. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for hanging out with us. And Flames Talk back this week after our one-week hiatus, which means our regular Thursday chat with the one and only Kevin Woodley is back as well. Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver. Lots to talk about Four Nations-wise, which we'll get to. The team Calgary's chasing in this playoff race once the schedule resumes this weekend, we'll dive in on. And obviously some Flames Talk with Kevin Woodley as well. Mr. Woodley, how are you?
I'd be much better if I didn't accidentally recycle my notes on Dustin Wolf from when you were away. So scrambling a little bit to do some video and recall what I saw in that as we go over that. But other than that, like every Canadian, I suppose I'm jacked up to see what happens tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting. I'm curious to hear your Four Nations goaltending thoughts, which we will definitely get to. But let's maybe put that Dustin Wolf video and data work to work, because, you know, Wes and I have had the conversation. Certainly Flames fans have had the conversation over the last number of weeks as Dustin Wolf started to get a true number one workload in the weeks leading up to the Four Nations break. And maybe in that last couple of weeks, the level of play from Dustin dipped a little bit on the outside. That seemed to be the narrative, that seemed to be the overwhelming opinion. But what about from you? I'm curious in terms of what you saw in terms of Wolf's work in the final weeks before the break. And on top of that, how much of that could be workload related?
Well, I mean, there's certainly going to be a learning curve here. And we've talked about that before. Like, as you start to play more games, you lose that time with your goalie coach to manage your game. You're focused on your body and your rest and being fresh, as opposed to extra reps before or after practice. And so that's, again, part of a learning curve that every goalie sort of goes through as they transition from backup to number one. And it's different in the NHL than it is in the American League, which still remains predominantly a weekend league where you play a couple over the weekend and then you've got all 5 days during the week to sort of reset, take a look back at what happened, put your work in and prepare for the following weekend. I know there's some midweek games, but for the most part, the American League is still a weekend league. Not the case anymore, right? Every second night means very little time to manage your game. And so there will be a bit of that. But I got to be honest, when I looked at especially the last three games, because that's where the numbers got a little crooked in a couple of them. Outside, like the Colorado game, 13 high danger chances, almost five expected goals against. He was actually better than expected in that game. The Toronto game, 12 high danger against, 4.17. You know, obviously a little lower than expected. I believe there was a low danger that goes in. There were all five were high danger. The low danger was the Seattle game where it was nine high danger against. One low danger goes in, 3.5 expected goals. So I'm not making... This isn't just forgive the goaltender, it's not his fault. Like, goalie's part of the game, and Dustin Wolf's been a massive part of theirs. But against some elite teams, especially in Colorado and Toronto, offensively, they bled a lot of chances, more than you can, frankly. And there were some open looks against Toronto where I thought, you know, the way he manages his depth and the way he plays, he's going to have to make sure he stays patient on those open looks. But there's also an element of there are some types of chances that you're not going to want to give up. And right, it looked like Toronto took advantage of those. So I think it was the Burakovsky goal. And like I said, I can't believe I tossed my notes because I did an extensive deep dive for last week on this. But I think it was the Burakovsky goal was the only one where you're sort of like, hey, that's really uncharacteristic in the Seattle game. So a little bit of both, right? Like, this team, you know, has started to bleed chances down the stretch there at a higher rate. They need him to bail them out. He hasn't at the same rate he did earlier, but certainly not one where I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh man, he's tired. You got to get him out of there and give him a break. Mm-hmm. Probably be well served by having one for the last couple of weeks though.
Kevin, I'm curious, like if Dustin Wolf has the sort of workload that we're anticipating down the stretch, and this is one of the numbers I've been looking at, he's going to be just the third rookie goaltender in the past 10 years to log 50 plus starts in a season. And so I know there's no magic answer to this, but how do the Flames go about making sure that fatigue doesn't become a factor?
Well, they could hire me, and I work for NHL minimum as a practice goalie.
I like that.
Would they have to worry about you recycling your notes?
No, but you know what they wouldn't have to worry about is the confidence of their shooters. Because they would be at an all-time high, let me tell you. No, but seriously, like with the farm team in the same building, and I haven't looked at their travel schedules to see how much they align, you know, there's work that needs to be done, and this is a tough one. This is going to have to be them forcing it and saying that they mandated it, because you have your work that you want to do as a goalie coach and with your student. And then there's a whole bunch of time in practice where, yes, this has gotten better over the years. It's not as bad as it used to be, where there were actually a ton of drills in practice for the longest time. They were actually like bad habit building for NHL goalies. It was, you know, it was absurd at times. We're not quite to that degree anymore, but there's certainly a lot of them where, you know, as a goalie, you're just there as a target. And part of the learning curve is recognizing that there are moments where you have to keep the energy in reserves and accept you're going to get scored on, but that can also be really tough on the confidence. So, you know, managing his practice by maybe giving him some reps off and incorporating a goalie, whether it's up from the Wranglers or, you know, in a practice goalie role, or if you need to find somebody else to fill that, like that's something that other teams are doing for their workhorse starters to manage their workload. We saw teams last year, you know, I know a couple that did it. Not everyone wanted it on the record, but we saw them where they would actually, when they had three goalies, they would actually fly if they had back-to-backs and one of their, say their starter for the second night wasn't going to play on the first night, they would fly him ahead to the next city, not even have him on the bench, because if you're on the bench as a backup, you're still going through all your routines. And so while the rest of the team's getting in at 4 a.m., their starting goalie that night's been there, settled into bed nice and early and gotten a proper rest for the second half of the back-to-back. There are things you can do outside of just limiting starts to mitigate the wear and tear, but a lot of goalies have told me they want nothing to do with that unless forced upon them. They certainly wouldn't want to be the ones asking for that, and I would suspect, to your point, Wes, about how rare what he's doing is for a rookie, the rookie is the last one who's going to want to be seen as having special treatment or treatment different from the team,
right?
Even though it's super easy to show your work, so to speak, and demonstrate why this would be a good thing for everyone if your goaltender was able to get more rest. I've seen this pushback. It's a very real thing on the practice goalie front. Guys don't want to be facing some ex-college guy, even if he's the best guy in the world and they love him and they say all the right things. They want to face an NHL goalie when they're shooting in practice. And mm-hmm. So we have seen a lot of pushback quietly behind the scenes on that over the years. And yet, you know, even amongst the goalies that don't want to admit it publicly, they'll go off the record and be like, yeah, like I would benefit from maybe not standing in there as guys are walking into the hash marks and letting her rip wave after wave in a rush drill.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending guru from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. He joins us Thursdays on Flames Talk. The team that Calgary is chasing, of course, is Vancouver. The Canucks with a three-point edge on the Flames with even games played going into the restart of the season. What do we know about the goaltending situation there, Kev? We know how good Lankinen's been. We know how good he was at the Four Nations, and we know Thatcher Demko has had his issues being able to remain in this lineup. What are we talking about goaltending-wise for the Canucks going into the restart?
Well, your Demko's not going to be on the trip, and this isn't a he-might-join-them situation. He will not, you know, they said he was going to be reevaluated close to the end of the trip, which is March 1st in Seattle. It's a five-gamer, and it starts with back-to-backs in Vegas and Utah. Obviously, Utah part of that chase as well. For the Canucks, then 2 days off and then back-to-backs in L.A. and Anaheim. So what you're probably looking at here is Artur Sylovs, who you know, lost the job at the start of the season while posting an 847 is probably getting two starts. I don't see them using Lankin in back-to-back, especially coming off, even though he's been off since Monday, was his final game at the Four Nations. You know, there's a mental toll that tournament's going to take. And every time, like, he's been so good for them, but the only times that his play has sort of fallen off is when they've overplayed him. You get into that, you know, starting 6 out of 7 or even 6 out of 8. It's always towards the tail end of that you sort of see his game evaporate a little bit. And so they've got to be cognizant of that. And I with double back-to-backs here, you know, maybe if you felt like you desperately needed the points, you might consider, you know, the no travel of LA Anaheim, perhaps. But I would be shocked if we didn't see two Archer Shelov starts in the next 5. And given the way this season started for him, very important starts, not just for the Vancouver Canucks, but for Archer Shelov in terms of reestablishing and rebuilding some confidence from the group in front of him. Because by the time it was over here, like the consensus, you know, in this market was like, you just can't play him anymore. Like, it got to that point where there was reason they played the wheels off Kevin Lankin, and despite clear diminishing returns right up until Demko coming back, was they just didn't feel they could get a game they could win with out of Artur Shelov. Now, the good news is for Arturs is this team is so much better defensively in the last couple of weeks leading into the break, and that's why they're 6-1-1. They appear for now to have reestablished the identity that allowed them to have the success they had last year. Mm-hmm. And that is forwards backtracking with speed, a more assertive, fast-paced forecheck, just more connected all over the ice, forwards coming back lower in the zone, making for easy outlets. You know, for all the criticism of this team's inability to move the puck out of its own end and get it in the hands of its forward all year, you know, some of that was guys not coming back far enough or in the right spots to be there for those outlet passes. And, you know, some changes. Drew O'Connor's fit really well. Seems to be more of a Rick Tocchet-type player maybe than Danton Heinen was. Vincent Desharnais, that experiment didn't work out. They moved on. They brought in Marcus Pettersson. And amazed, really, that the guys they brought in, O'Connor, Pettersson, Cheadle, have all the speed in particular with Cheadle and O'Connor has been evident. And Pettersson's just really sort of settled out their defensive depth, even without Quinn Hughes. So with Hughes coming back, presumably he'll practice tomorrow and hopefully get cleared once and for all afterwards. You know, their defense looks better than it has at any point this season, and their forwards are contributing to that. So at least Shelov won't be expected to bail them out as often as he was right early this season and wasn't able to do so.
What's the right way to handle Demko when he's back, Kev? It's such a delicate situation because the injuries continue to pop up. Like, what is the best course of action when he's ready to return this time around?
Yeah, I mean it's tough to say because I don't know what this injury is, and they know best, right? But this is 4 now in less than a calendar year, you know, and I believe them when they say it's not the knee this time. So that means, you know, 2 knees, a back injury that cost him a week in early January, and then this one here, which looks like it's going to be 3 to 4 lower body soft tissue. Listen, at the end of the day, I think, you know, even I underestimated how difficult it would be to come off or to come back, given how much time he missed because of that second knee injury and the uncertainty that surrounded it. And he'd always been so good at coming back, even after long stretches, and finding his form quite quickly, that I was among the many who sort of presumed that would happen. And perhaps it was both naive and unfair to cast those expectations on him, because you're talking about, you know, like 7 months, you know, none of your regular summer work in terms of off ice or on ice. And there's a guy who is always back on August 1st, working with the goalie coach, doing extra work, privates, making sure he's ready to go. Well, none of that, no preseason, no training camp, and then come back in mid-December and it's like trying to catch a moving train. And so, you know, you're probably more prone to little tweaks and pulls and, you know, in the case of the early January back spasms, because you're trying to play catch up. The positive for them is, from a playing standpoint, in the last five starts before this injury, he looked like the Thatcher Demko that was a finalist for the Vezina Trophy last year. And he hadn't really up until that point. There were bits here and there, but never really had games where you saw it all come together. And the explosiveness was back and all those elements. So if you're the Canucks, you hope this is minor. And that when he comes back, there's no sort of hiccups of movement or lack of trust in his own body. And he comes right back close to the level he left at 3 weeks. That might be a bit of an ask, but at least it's not 7 months this time. And at the end of the day, you have to understand that the way it's going, probably be the more fair to say you're not going to get him back to where he feels comfortable with everything until next season. Like, this is... You're so far behind because of all the time missed that I've had other guys tell me, you know, you're probably going to need a full summer to reset everything, right, and feel like you're starting from, you know, starting like a normal season. And so in the meantime, you just, you know, you hope you can get him back up and running and playing at the level he was and confident enough in his body that you can get him through the end of the season. I mean, nobody's going to remember this if he comes back, you know, in, say, 4 weeks off the injury, so right around the trade deadline, and quickly reestablishes himself and stays healthy the rest of the year and plays at that level, because now at least he's rested in the playoffs. But I think there's always going to be that waiting for the other shoe to drop in this market because of how this last year has gone.
Yeah. We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending guru. He joins us every Thursday here on Flames Talk. And I think we've delayed long enough. Let's talk about this Four Nations face-off and Thursday's Canada-U.S. showdown and more. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Wes?
Kevin, I was walking out of the Flames practice facility or where they practice today at Winsport, walking out of the rink today and chatting with a National Hockey Leaguer who, let's just say, won't be cheering for Team Canada tonight. One of the Flames American-born players. And, you know, we're just kind of going back and forth about what to expect out of this game we're all so excited to see. And, you know, the one thing I said is, you know, it wouldn't be Canadian if I wasn't a little bit nervous about the goaltending. And his response was, yeah, but Hellebuck has had his struggles in the playoffs. You know, Hellebuck's had some, you know, games that weren't that good in the big spotlight. And so let me ask you this one first on the Four Nations. Is tonight a legacy game for Connor Hellebuck?
Oh, I don't know if it's a legacy game, because he'll tell you he's only halfway through his career and he's well on his way to Hall of Fame numbers in the regular season. But certainly tonight is an opportunity, and he has to this point, to quiet some of the talk around his lack of playoff success and maybe end any conversations or hints that it has, you know, anything to do with a mental block or the pressure being too much. I've said this sort of throughout, and listen, like I've said it sort of going into playoffs in years past. The way he has success, like the Jets do a really good job in the regular seasons of limiting, with the way they defend, the types of chances that he struggles with the most. And nobody should apologize for that. Like, building a system that fits your number one goalie seems to me like smart business.
Yeah, not a bad
and
strategy.
I wish more teams would do it, frankly. Pay attention to those things. In the playoffs, they haven't been able to sustain it. And again, when I say weaknesses, please keep in mind it is relative, like relative weaknesses. So on east-west plays up until this season, if you move the puck laterally through the middle of the ice below the top of the circles, his numbers were right around NHL average. That's not bad. But when everything else, you know, every other type of scoring chance is so far above league average that you're winning two Vezina trophies, it's a relative weakness and teams attack it. And last year, I thought Colorado doubled, made it even harder. Like, they scored 24 goals in five games. Seven of them were on those slot line plays. Another seven were on traffic was the number one factor. And then there were broken plays and deflections. So the thing we've talked about, and I think I've mentioned this to you guys before when discussing Hellebuck, because I've done some columns on how absurdly good the first half of the season he had was. And interestingly enough, his numbers dropped in January to below expected. But the environment was so good, I don't think anybody really noticed it. But he wasn't playing at the same level heading into this. So full credit to him. As a matter of fact, I thought he was, it might not set up well for him, but he's back to, he's showing that behind a good team, he can continue to perform like this, even on the biggest stage. But he reads the game. Sorry, to get back to that point, he reads the game like Dominic Hasek. We used to say, brain like a computer, body like a slinky. That's how Hasek played. Connor has the brain like a computer. Doesn't use the body like a slinky. It's all about efficiency and patience on his edges and just the size he has. But the way he processes, the way he anticipates, I've done stories. I've been blessed to sit down and watch video with him for In Goal Magazine and our pro reads, and we've got those online where he explains what he's seeing and his reads and his reaction and why he plays it a certain way based on what he anticipates coming. And I've had this conversation with Wade Flaherty, their goalie coach, and Eric Comrie, who's been there for years with him and over two stints. He sees things that nobody else sees. There are times where I did the video where there's a 2-on-1 coming over the blue line, and he's not only telling the audience that this guy's shooting, but he's telling them where he's shooting before he gets to the top of the circles based on things like hand position and blade angle, the way he's holding his hips, where he's looking. It's crazy stuff. And Wade Flaherty said the same thing. There's times where he's just like, hey man, why are you here? Why are you? And he's like, no, you see this over here? That's where it's going. This is what I read. And he's just like, holy crap, I didn't even see that. And he's been doing this a long time. So yeah. If you're that good at that, as much as it's a cliche, how do you beat it? You take away the eyes. You have to get traffic. Canada didn't do any of that in the first game against the States. I didn't think, obviously they didn't have Makar. And now Makar at the blue line combined with a better net front presence, a guy who can find lanes with his feet and get that high-powered sifter through those lanes into the top corners of the net. That's a weapon that can be key against Connor Hellebuck. They've created a lot of rebound chances on him. But if a rebound falls right in front of me, I think he's done a great job of keeping rebounds in front of him. And he's basically built a wall behind it. So a lot of the public data will indicate that they've got a ton of high danger because the chances are right at the top of the crease or right inside the crease on those rebounds. But you might as well be trying to put your head through a brick wall. He's built the coverage, the puck 6 inches from him. There's no way for it to go into the net. And so I think you've got to create more of that chaos. You've got to create more screens than they did. And then when you get those rebounds, especially on a power play, take a page out of the Oilers book where Leon Draisaitl is always sitting near the bottom of the circle. So if there's a battle in front of the net, you're not always trying to put it back at the goaltender, just funnel it off to the side for someone to take a quick shot from a dead angle before the goalie can recover. Little things like that, got to get more traffic, got to get more tips. The other thing, the East-West plays this year that used to be the bugaboo for him, his numbers are actually really good against them this season. He's playing way deeper. You'll see it tonight. He's nowhere near as aggressive with his positioning. He's damn near Henrik Lundqvist-like in terms of his depth decisions right now. And so how can you target that? Again, traffic, tips. If you're getting deflections and the goalie's deeper in his net, we sort of get taught at a young age to get close to the point of the deflection, because then you're taking up more space and you cut off the angle before it can change on you. When he's further back in his crease, he's more susceptible to that. It's one of the few scoring types this year where he's not above league average.
For me and anybody else who's biting their nails a little bit as they dip their ketchup chips in maple syrup tonight at 6:20, can you just give me a Jordan Binnington hype speech?
He'll be fine. I know everyone, I keep seeing on the internet, one bad goal a game. I'm like, I know the Gensel goal looks terrible, man, but there's a lot of deception in there. I know it looks bad because it's 5-hole, but watch the way the blade, the heel leads the toe. It looks to me like he's going short side high. He scored that goal on a lot of guys. As a goalie, you're trying to stay patient. It's off a lateral. Binnington beats it and he's set. And I just think Gensel deceived him. I know that for a second there, I thought he might have whiffed. Because I thought that was going short side high. Yeah. Mark Messier on the ESPN broadcast, I had a friend that I sent that note to him, did he whiff? Messier in the intermission on the broadcast thought he whiffed as well. Now, other people have said that's just a shot he has in his repertoire. So, you know, this is the best of the best at the Four Nations. This is elite players making elite plays. And from a close range off a lateral feed, that may just be Jake Guentzel beating Jordan Binnington with great deception. So I don't even see that necessarily as bad a goal as maybe people do around the league because it went five hole. The reality, when it comes to low percentage goals this year, it was one of the reasons, you know, I could justify them picking Binnington even in a down year. You know, he was one of the top three goalies in this tournament going in terms of not allowing low danger goals. As a matter of fact, he had allowed two fewer than Connor Hellebuck this season, and his numbers on low danger shots, his adjusted save percentage was slightly better. So, I don't know if that's much of a hype speech to say, hey, we can count on this guy to not give up bad goals, but I think he's made some big saves in there too. And again, the whole point we kept hearing about, like, how Canada just needs goalies not to cost them games, and that's all you're asking. I think he's done a lot more than that. I think you're finally seeing people appreciate the puck handling and how against this American forecheck and how heavy it can be with a Brady Tkachuk, and I shuddered watching him run Doughty in that one sequence. Binnington saves them a lot of hits back there. He stops more pucks than most goalies. He's out early. He sets it up. He aids the transition games with quick plays. The one thing that makes me nervous is that narrative has grown and the questions about have increased during the tournament, and he's gotten more confident back there. Like against Finland, he was back there like, you know, if it's on the glass, you're supposed to leave it. If it's on the ice, he's going to get to it. He was out there picking stuff off the glass, out of the air, behind the net. And anytime you're being that aggressive, you certainly leave yourself prone to a bounce off a stanchion. And I would suggest, given the skill of some of the American defenders, if I was doing a pre-scout for Team USA tonight, I might have one guy hard rim three or four in, and then on the fourth or fifth one, pump fake and slap one on the net to see if you can get him to go a little early. Because the reality is he's been a massive difference maker to their transition game with how well he gets out behind the net. Even if he's just leaving it, even if he's just making a short little pass, it doesn't have to be Mike Smith or Carey Price. It's a smart little decision. And the fact he is stopping those pucks at a much higher rate, I think, than anyone else in the tournament. And that's that many fewer plays the defensemen have to make with their backs to on charging USA forecheckers.
Kev, I feel better already.
Ah.
Thank you.
I don't know if I had the maple syrup out on that one, but like, it's funny, right? Because a lot of the conversation about Canadian goaltending is part of the problem, right? And they have this in the States too right now, is like decreasing numbers of registration for goalies. Like, and then you look, I had a goalie coach send me this note this week from Canada. He's like, we're complaining because we can't keep and develop goalies and we need to get more goalies. And then we get to the international stage and a nation of supposedly hockey savvy people, all we do is blame the bloody goalie. What parent in their right mind would watch how social media interactions of Jordan Binnington over this Four Nations have gone and be like, sign my kid up for that, please.
It's fair.
That's a good point.
That's a very fair point.
I'd be uncomfortable blaming anybody but the goalie, but your point is valid.
It's okay. We're used to it.
Spoken like a true goalie.
Yeah, guys, the goalie union is kind of used to it, I think. Good stuff, Kev. Enjoy the game, and we'll check in again next week, see where things sit as we're back into a regular season NHL play. Great stuff, as always. Hey, thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you soon.
Love it, guys. Really appreciate it. Enjoy tonight, and then back at it for next week.
Absolutely. He's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar on this Thursday. Serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.